It's time for a newsmaker's interview with Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele, because he's been drawn into the debate over Milwaukee Public Schools. He was a big part of the negotiations over the new Bucks Arena. And, oh yeah, he's up for re-election next year. Mr. County Executive, welcome back to Wisconsin Eye.
Great to be here.
I want to start with this fascinating debate over you and Milwaukee Public Schools failing schools. Yeah. So, do I have this right? Because it's been a while since I've looked at it. Not next school year, you will name an overseer to supervise two failing schools? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure, a commissioner.
A commissioner.
We have to name somebody pretty soon, actually, middle of next month. Next fall, based on a list that DPI provides of schools, I think the initial idea was to take a school that's currently an MPS, a failing school, mm-hmm. and this commission would be in charge of trying to turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
I have enormous respect for both Dale and Alberta. You know, we disagree on some things, but I've always gotten along with both of them.
Coinga and Darling, Senator Darling.
Correct,
excuse me.
I've talked to them a bunch about this approach. MPS is something that's been a concern for me personally for a long time. I've worked with superintendents back to, you know, fairly early Andrikopoulos even. And, you know, I care about improving schools. I've seen this type of recovery district. I've been to New Orleans and I've visited KIPP schools, and I know it works and I know it doesn't work. I think, you know, one of the first things I've said with them and to most people is there's no light switch panacea here. Everybody agrees we need to do better, but it's rarely the case that one piece of legislation is going to suddenly turn things around. I told them that I have great respect for Dr. Driver. I got to know her when the previous superintendent, Greg Thornton, brought her in as chief innovation officer, and I'm very excited about her ability to make some real change. I think she's already making some great change. And so I told Representative Coinga and Senator Darling that, you know, I don't want to come in and start a new fight. I'm uninterested in anything but a productive relationship. I don't want this to be a proxy for one of the sort of charter versus choice versus, you know, district.
So you certainly didn't ask for this.
I did not ask for this.
Okay.
No. Nor did I have any input on writing the legislation. But that said, I think most people probably know this of me. I'm very clear on the fact that it is rarely the case that, you know, legislation passes that is exactly what you want, or that any sort of starting circumstance is optimum. We all get to choose how we react to that. And to me, it's an opportunity to at least try and do something to help. And so, and to be clear, I think the bigger goal for Senator Darling and Representative Coinga is to help. I mean, they don't, you know, they're not interested in blowing anything up. So I told them, look, I'm going to be totally transparent with Dr. Driver. I want this to be a productive relationship. I want to do everything I can to try and make this work. And I've sort of had two categories of approach. One is to think about, all right, how are we going to approach the school part, but that's a little further out. In the meantime, the county, we run the Health and Human Services and Behavioral Health Division, and we do wraparound services. We already have a partnership with MPS, but months ago I had our director put together a list for me of what are all the current partnerships we have at MPS, and then separately, what are the services we could provide, and on that list, the subset of ones where we can draw down federal funding that MPS can't. So we could say to MPS, here are services we can add for help with special needs kids, whatever it is, that will have no cost at all to MPS. And again, it's an offer, it's not a request, I want to do this with you. But it's also been an opportunity to look at a lot of opportunities for shared services. I know that, you know, the discussion started with schools, but here's the thing, MPS runs 22 parks, just as an example. We have a parks department, we have a lot more capacity, our economies of scale are better, and it's cheaper. So as I've been talking with Dr. Bonds and Dr. Driver, I want to look at every opportunity with the county, the city, an MPS for shared services where, in the meantime, let's save each other some money. So if we could take care of PARC for them, mm-hmm. save money for MPS, mm-hmm. we get a little bit extra earned revenue at the county. That's cash that they can put back in as they see fit. There's a bunch of opportunities like that. I've already working with the Public Policy Forum, who is outside sort of a third party doing a study and kind of mapping the system. Where are the other opportunities for shared service? I've been meeting with State Superintendent Tony Evers and his folks about, hey, are there other opportunities where through the county and through this position we can find ways to help MPS? But you know, the sort of unifying theme here is I don't want to do anything that is going to hurt kids or families who are currently at MPS. They didn't do anything wrong. I want to be aggressive in looking for as many ways as I can to help a lot of the good things I think, you know, Darian already knows that she wants to do. And in the meantime, you know, if this is what it takes to sort of open the door and talk about, all right, what other changes can we make, I'm always going to enthusiastically embrace that opportunity.
Would your commissioner then have jurisdiction over one or two failing schools in the 16-17 school year, too?
Well, it depends. There's a lot of things in the legislation that aren't entirely clear. They're a little ambiguous, and we've talked to Senator Darling and Representative Coinga about that. One of the things that you've seen, an idea we floated, is that, well, what if we took one of the empty buildings, mm-hmm. so not a current school, and in it created a pre-K school? The virtue of that, if it's workable, is that we're not cannibalizing the student population of MPS, but if you had a pre-K school that was close to one of the higher functioning MPS schools, and there's some great schools, and that pre-K acted as a feeder to a high-functioning school, it actually could increase the student count at that school. But you ask any teacher in any system, you want students coming in that have been through a good early childhood education program, they will all say yes. And what I'm looking for is things that add without creating conflict. And I'd like to, as early as possible, find some wins where, you know, MPS and this group, you know, can jointly say, hey, this, say something on parks or wraparound services, this is a win for everybody, and build a little bit of trust and try and get by what folks who aren't in Milwaukee might not know is a very heated discussion always about the different modalities of education. You know, there's a lot of history here.
But in 17-18 school year, don't you then get even more? Doesn't the commissioner have more jurisdictions over more failing schools?
Potentially. Okay. But again, I think there may be... the way I look at it is this. If I think that the legislation will force a decision that is going to have among other things, a negative impact on MPS, I'm going to work hard to try and do something else, not to flout the, I don't want to defy the spirit of this. I want to help, help our educational system writ large in Milwaukee, and I'll do whatever I can to do that. And I think that Senator Darling and Representative Coinga feel the same way. I mean, If I could say, hey, I don't think, you know, two more schools every year is the best thing we can do to help education, mm-hmm. but here's what I think could, I think they're wide open to it. I don't think their intent is blow things up. They want to help. That's how I read it.
How soon do you want to name a commissioner, and you're going to ask somebody like Howard Fuller to return to leave academe, or I heard Arnie Duncan's available.
But, yeah, or
how
maybe
soon?
Seelig, right?
How soon?
I think the deadline is November 15th, technically. I've been, needless to say, talking to many, many people, and it won't surprise you, I've heard an enormous range of opinions. I've accepted long since that just about anybody I could name is going to piss off somebody. And I've tried to get lots of input from lots of people. And I think even getting people interested is a little bit tricky, because anybody who's considering this is clear on the fact that there's going to be, at least at the beginning, a fair amount of resistance to just about any suggested change. And there's got to be a commitment for whoever takes this position, you know, to stick with it a little bit and be willing to bear some slings and arrows. And it's important to me, like I said, I don't want someone who's just going to come in and throw punches and, you know, be proxy for some existing fight here. I want it to be a productive relationship. The other issue is that when they pass this legislation, there's no funding along with it. So I have to name a commissioner and, in theory, a couple support staff. When they ask, so what's the pay? Well, asterisk right now. I've been working with the foundation community and certainly Dale in Alberta saying, look, A, I'm going to need you to revisit this at some point soon, just so we can sustainably have this position. And in the short run, talking to the foundation community about some, you know, funding to sort of bridge us to that point.
And it sounds like you want to name somebody with local roots. You don't want to do a national. You're not doing a national search.
I've certainly had many ideas suggested, including names, you know, from all over different cities and communities. But I do think it's important to have somebody who understands our district, ideally who's familiar with our system, both to build credibility in the community, but also to be familiar with the system and the sort of nuances it has when they're walking in the door. So it's not a big learning project.
Let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks deal, which I found fascinating to unfold in a lot of different ways. Were you surprised at the Marquette Law School polls showing a majority against public aid to help build a new arena? Were you surprised? Even in the city of Milwaukee.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I think I don't know if I was really surprised about that. I mean, I guess if you had, if I had to guess, what would be the basis for that? People aren't wrong around Milwaukee specifically to be suspicious and have some doubts about public financing for a sports venue. We all live in an area that has a taxing district for Miller Park, one that was supposed to sunset a couple sunsets ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so people aren't wrong when the idea is floated to have some skepticism. They're right. I mean, that's what they've seen. As I've said many times, I still continue to believe and feel more strongly than ever that this was a very solid investment for the city, the county, and the state, and will have a very big return for a broad, broad part of the community, and you know will have a huge impact economically.
The Lambeau Field renovation was approved by a referendum. Mm-hmm. Had there been a Milwaukee County referendum, do you think it would have passed?
You know, I'm not sure. But I guess another way of looking at that is I know most expansions of Lambeau have had at least some resistance on the front end when they were proposed. But I think if you, 5 years later, polled the community and said, do you think this was a good thing? Do you think it's had a positive impact on the community? I think they do pretty well. Part of the nature of referendums is, you know, they measure a point in time. And by definition, they can only, it's a limited perspective. And retrospect tends to, you know, by definition, give one more perspective. And I think most people feel pretty good about the investments that have been made in Lambeau. And I think most people feel, in retrospect, despite the fact that the Miller Stadium tax has lasted longer than it should, and they should be frustrated about that, if you ask them, do they feel good about the stadium? And kind of what the impact has been, I think at minimum you'd get a more positive response than you got before.
The original deal called for Milwaukee County to contribute, well, the state would collect unpaid Milwaukee County debt.
Correct.
Now that came off the rails a little bit. So where is Milwaukee going to come up with its $20 million?
Right. So, the county obligation is $4 million a year for 20 years. So
okay,
over
excuse
20
me.
Years, it's 80.
Thanks for the correction.
No, that's all right. And initially, as you say, what was in the legislation and what made, I was much more comfortable with is the state debt collection program is something that's used around the state. 100 and something municipalities, the DPI uses it, the UW system uses it, and it, for all of them, has resulted in millions more in collections. And the reason I like it is it's millions more without raising fees, without raising any taxes. This is just getting people who owe taxes or fees to pay what they owe. And we spent a lot of time with the folks at the Department of Revenue having them assure us, because I wanted to be really solid on this, hey, are you sure you can generate an incremental $4 million a year?
Mm-hmm.
And from beginning to end, they were always quite sure we could do more than that. And based on sort of their experience in other communities, we felt pretty good about it. The bill was changed at the last minute. Before the final version, it was actually Senator Larson who wanted that the debt collection part removed.
He wanted it out, saying
right.
that would prey upon, that's his words, not mine, some people that are already behind in foreclosures and payment of their forfeitures and
right.
fines. Go ahead, excuse
yeah.
me.
Right. His argument at the time was this would be sort of an unfair burden on folks that were financially stressed already. The observations I made are, first, the program that this state has was based off a program that Minnesota has had for about 20 years. And were it the case that this program regularly had the impact he was worried about, presumably, pretty progressive liberal Minnesota would have done something about it. The program was put in place in this state in the Doyle administration, voted on by actually now our treasurer, elected treasurer here, but then Representative Dave Cullen.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard complaints from the UW system, from the Department of Public Instruction about the fact that they're collecting more. And I guess the other point I gently made is normally, you know, as I said to Chris, I think Democrats usually are for closing tax loopholes. Second, when people don't pay the taxes and fees they owe, that is made up by the people who do pay their taxes. And any time government says we're going to be somewhat less vigilant on making sure some group of citizens pay their taxes, I think it's an extremely poor message to send to the people who do. And as for empowering people, you know, in the last 5 years, we've added in a way that where we never had it before. At the House of Correction, we give GEDs and job training and resume preparation and child support. We used to just get checks to single parents. Now we do not dozens, not hundreds, thousands of job training and job placement, license recovery for dads, and peer training. That helps people get back on their feet. Boy, you know, as a platform, helping people who aren't paying what they owe continue to not pay what they owe seems like a bit of a losing proposition. But the functional impact of all this is we had a bill where the obligation of $4 million a year remains for the county to pay,
yes.
but the mechanism we were going to use to pay for it is out.
Yes.
And then Senator Larson voted for that version.
Yes.
And I think was asked at the time, well, you know, how is the county supposed to come up with this? And I think he said they were going to have, we'd have to figure that out. For what it's worth, the budget I just put together, good news, you know, the county's in better fiscal shape, a lot better fiscal shape now than it was 5 years ago. So our budget this year, again, doesn't raise taxes. Fifth year in a row we've done that. I feel good about that. Every department, with the one exception, got the budget it requested. It has the biggest increase for employees that we've ever done, 2.5% over base pay last year. Healthcare, flat, no increase at all. We added a tuition reimbursement program. We've never had one before, $2,500 a year per employee, any year they want. Take classes, get better at what you do. And I assumed that the county would have to make up the entire $4 million, and that's built into this budget. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to still pursue the state debt collection, I am, but I built a budget that covers, I mean, I always put in conservative assumptions. I would say budget for the apocalypse. Shoot for unprecedented, but be ready to pay for the apocalypse. So the budget can do all these things and not raise your taxes and cover all $4 million, but I'm going to work very hard to try and address the legislation to put back in the bill that I thought was basically the way it was envisioned.
Is this your biggest disagreement with Senator Larson? Do you think it is the number one reason that he's running against you, sir?
That's a good question. You'd have to ask him. I think I'll certainly say this. It's been surprising to me that in the 5 years I've been here, I've worked pretty hard to have good relationships with everybody in Madison. When we reformed the mental health, the behavioral health division here, it took state statute to do it. But one of the things I'm most proud of is we got a vote at the state level of, I think it was 123-2. So with two exceptions, every Democrat and every Republican. And mm-hmm. I think the reason we got there is we didn't make it about right or left, you know, who wins, who loses. It was, hey, this doesn't have to be a political issue. This can be about doing right by the people we serve. And happily, you know, I mean, we had our first surplus, a $10 million surplus after years of deficit. Emergency room visits are down for the first time. Involuntary detentions are down. And we're serving 14% more people. I like to think I've been able to build good relationships with both Democrats and Republicans. And I have had some people frustrated with me on the left who think I'm insufficiently angry at Republicans. And, you know, when I ran for office the first time, I think the ad that I liked at the time that I ran was, I don't care if it's a Republican idea or a Democrat idea. If it works, we'll do it. You know, I came to Wisconsin 20 years ago, and I was lucky enough to meet Governor Pat Lucey and his best friend, also former Governor Lee Dreyfus. And very publicly, they were friends for a long time, and I just thought, this is great. I mean, the world didn't fall apart. You know, they can agree on a lot of things.
1D, 1R,
okay.
Getting along.
And things have changed, but they can change back. And
okay.
I think on both sides, there are some people who worry and see bipartisanship as a bad thing, or compromise, or weakness, or something. But
some supervisors and Senator Lena Taylor want to create a Office of African American Affairs. Mm-hmm. That would seem to imply that they don't think your record on helping the county's African Americans is what it should have been. I want to give you a chance to talk
sure.
about that.
Sure. Well. You know, as I said when they announced it the other day, I think most of the time you create a new department, it certainly has a better chance of being effective if it's organized, it's funded, and you've talked to the departments that are going to be implementing whatever it is you want them to implement. That's not what happened here. I told Supervisor Rennie, look, I'll take any opportunity I can to bring up and bring more attention to an issue that we really should be concerned about, the disparity in incarceration rates.
Yes.
But my approach to addressing it is I looked at, we're in the county where, in a state where we incarcerate more African Americans per capita than any other state in the country. So my approach was we took over the House of Corrections from the sheriff. We went from no program to 20 different skill programs. We give GEDs. We do job training, resume planning. We reactivate the recycling center, the print shop, the cafeteria. We partnerships with the Hunger Task Force. People are automatically enrolled in the Affordable Care Act if they're eligible when they come out. That's often the first insurance they've had. Most of them get a bank card. That's how we do commissary accounts now, and that's often the first bank card they've had. Every day they work is a day off their sentence, and last year that was about 3,000 days. That makes a difference, and that's not just a resolution. It's impact and outcome, and I applaud any attempt to bring more focus and attention to an issue we should talk about, but at the end of the day, I expect to be held accountable for results and impact. Similarly, we just started a program with the Milwaukee Area Workforce Investment Board, MAWIB, and MATC, where the county is funding work training specifically in the zip codes like 53206, well, essentially the zip codes with the highest need, the highest unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, with child support, we went from doing essentially next to nothing for mostly the dads. I mean, generally checks are going to single parents bringing up kids. To now, we just 2 weeks ago announced the biggest grant, the Pathways to Responsible Fatherhood grant that the federal government has ever given, and we were the only one in the country to get it. $2 million a year for 5 years, and all of that is job training, license recovery, peer counseling on how to reengage with family, and we know it works. Part of the reason we got it is because we've done such a good job. All of these things are programs that weren't happening before, but they are now. And aside from that, I spent 20 years and continue to volunteer thousands of hours and help raise millions of dollars for groups like the Boys and Girls Club here, the Boys and Girls Club of America. You know, here we have 43,000 members in Milwaukee. The vast majority are African American. And my hope and why I take such joy in that is they do a great job creating opportunity and a path for everyone. I don't take a backseat to anybody.
So you've got a record on this, on these issues, but you still will accept if they want to create this new office.
Anything to do more. I mean,
okay.
I'd add to all of this. Is it enough? No, I always want to do more. There will never be a time when I'm going to say good enough.
Okay. This the debate over state highway funding. Mm-hmm. And does that have any, what impact does that have in Milwaukee County? This idea that we should borrow an additional $200 million,
right.
Impact in your county?
Well, yes, because decisions like that necessitate related decisions that lead to the county right now, for instance, getting less in transit funding still than we did 5 years ago.
Yeah. Last time we talked, we talked transit funding.
Yeah.
Now, I think you just got a deal with your bus drivers, right?
We did, yeah. We
okay.
got a contract.
But
yeah, 3-year contract.
But
yeah.
What about the regional, the whole bus system for
yeah,
the county?
I would love to do, I'd love to be able to do more, but what I can tell you is this, it's a priority to me. So 8 years prior to my being in office, every year bus routes were cut, fares were increased, or both. And so one of the things I'm proud of is 5 years in a row, including this year, we have never cut routes. In fact, this year there'll be 1 million route miles more than there were 5 years ago, and we have never raised fares. And that's been difficult to do, and we've been able to do it by pulling additional county tax levy in from other departments, some federal grants. But at some point, it's going to be incredibly difficult to maintain that level of service without a restoration of support. So for my part, when I see the state increasing borrowing for large highway projects, and again, I'm all for a healthy highway system, but the relativities here are stark. Every major highway project is hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. You could restore transit funding for not just Milwaukee County, but the state for about $24 million. So, the Story Hill project they're talking about just west of Milwaukee is $900 million. $900 million versus $24 million. And
yes.
Right now, it's 151,000 rides every single day. That's people getting to work who need the bus to get to work or to get to school. And UWM, MATC are huge users. And, the focus for me is making sure that when people depend on the bus to get to their job, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they can keep getting there or to get to school or to doctor visits. And I look at that, the return on investment and the return on, empowering the community, $24 million restore transit for the whole state versus, these just giant projects or $200 million for a new building at Hills Farm. Maybe it's necessary. Was this the most effective, cost-effective solution? Was the kind of diligence in planning that project that said, this isn't our money, it's your money, and we need to get the best value we can. Is this the only way we could get there? Does it actually require $200 million more? Maybe it does. I guess sometimes I'd like to see more indications of that diligence.
We just came off a debate over a state budget. Let me ask it this way. What's your top priority if you're reelected for the next state budget? What's your top ask for the 17-19 budget?
Sure. Big picture, I'd like to see our state paying down the credit card the way we've been trying to do it here at the county. We've knocked over $500 million off a liability here. And so when people say, hey, 5 years in a row you haven't raised taxes at the county, and yet you've got departments hitting all-time record levels and you're giving the biggest raise to employees, how are you able to do it? Well, we're paying a lot less on interest payments now because mm-hmm. we have been paying down the credit card. So when I see the state, for whatever reason, just extending debt, borrowing a lot, I just, probably like most people who balance budgets, I just worry about what we're doing for future generations. I want to be moving in a direction where, more of your tax dollar is going towards program and less towards debt. So that's my big picture ask. I'd also, I've been very frustrated by the cuts in education. I don't think there's any system that can't find more efficiency, but boy, you know, the UW system is such an important part of the economy here, and an important part of generating jobs and research, and it impacts so many other things. And ditto K through 12 funding for public schools. You know, do we need to do a better job delivering? Probably, but the answer can't just be cut, cut, cut. And so,
running for re-election, you're going to be asked to give your vision of Milwaukee County government and its achievements 4 years after you're reelected. Mm-hmm. What are you specifically going to say are your next term goals if you're reelected?
Sure. Well, I tell people often the reason I ran for office is not because, you know, it's the start of a long career in politics. I love where I live. I think public service is a noble thing, and I want to get government right. I didn't run because I wanted to sort of slow the bleeding. As I often say, I didn't run to make incremental change. I ran because I want to build the most nimble, efficient, and empowering government in the country. I don't think for a second, and I never have, that that would be easy. I'm quite sure it'll be hard. But first, everything worth working hard for is hard. Second, you know, we've dropped over $500 million of liabilities, and we have departments that are winning, you know, national awards, setting all-time records. 5 years in a row, we haven't raised taxes. You know, we just were able to give this, you know, biggest raise we have to all of our employees. We're ending chronic homelessness right now with permanent housing, and if we stay on the schedule, we will do this faster than any metro in America. And we announced a couple weeks ago, we're ahead of schedule. Again, I don't think, you know, the most nimble, efficient, and empowering government in the country is going to be easy, but I absolutely think it's possible. I've got a better team than I've ever had. We know more about what we're doing. We're better resourced. Got a little momentum, and I'm persistent.
And then finally, why did you feel you have to say, I will not be running for governor in 2018?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Just a lot of people come up and ask you to run? Or
yeah, actually.
You finally had to drive a stake in the ground and say, no, read my lips, I won't.
Read my lips.
Why?
Yeah. Well, a couple of reasons. I've been surprised by how it's almost just received wisdom that anybody in elected office must clearly be solely focused on what's next. And maybe that's the case for a fair amount of people. But I also don't think people should underestimate the number of people, and maybe it's a minority, but who are in public service because they actually care about it. I kept my venture fund, and I'm involved with that. I'm still involved in a bunch of nonprofit boards. You know, I'm not here because of the paycheck or the title. I'm here because I believe in government, and I want to prove something because I love the community I live in. And by letting people know, no, I'm not running for governor, part of it is, you know, in campaign season, people get kind of skittish and wary in politics, and they kind of wonder who's, you know, everybody's looking around and who's threatening my job. And I just wanted to be able to just take that off the table and say, no, I'm not a threat. I'm not interested in your job. And I want to be able to maintain, at least between me and whoever I deal with in elected office, a healthy, productive relationship focused on solutions, not who's going to be running against them.
If not you, do you want to throw out any names of Democrats who should consider running for governor?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I won't be the first person to say I like Ron Kind. I think he'd be an interesting governor. I know he's thought about it before, but, you know, who am I to speak for somebody else? I guess I'll see who tosses their hat in the ring.
Very good. Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley, thanks so much for sitting down with Wisconsin Eye.
Anytime, I always enjoy it.
Thank you very much.